I knew a guy who was struggling quite a bit with weight and seesaw diets and the rest of it. And I said, how's it going? He said, well, it's going pretty well. And I looked at him. I thought, oh, it doesn't seem to be going pretty well. And he said, I don't have a problem with weight anymore. I said, oh, really? He said, well, why? How is that? And he said, I just took all the mirrors out of my house. And sometimes we can deal with reality like that. Sometimes we could say, well, it's only a problem if I am going to see it as a problem. Otherwise, I will make it into, you know, some positive thing. You often see that when you either turn on TV, or maybe you're old enough to have read those books of positive thinking, and heck, they're still coming or flying off the shelf, all those books of positive thinking. Just take that negative and turn it into a positive. Turn that smile upside down or whatever, whatever, right? And it always seems like a good thing. Except it's not very realistic sometimes, because the negatives in our lives, some of them are very real negatives. Isn't that the case? And you can be able to make them and try to make them into something else, but we always know those people that really go against reality don't last too long. You can say, I am going to make my own reality. There was an abortion case back in the 1970s in the United States, went all the way up to the Supreme Court, called Casey versus Webster. And in the Supreme Court decision, one line was, everyone is entitled to make their own reality, to create their own universe. I remember the first time I read that, I said, that can't be right. Well, it isn't right, but they wrote it anyway. And I often say that to people, reality, well, reality is something that, like it or not, you got to deal with. Isn't that true? You can say, I'm going to make my own reality, but don't walk in front of a speeding car, because that's a different reality. And we do come face to face with that reality. The reality that we look at in Lent is that it's very, very hard to be perfect. Isn't that true? I know a lot of people that would like to think they're perfect, but you can sort of be disabused of that pretty fast. It's very hard not to fall into sin. We can keep ourselves busy, that's true, but busyness does not equal holiness all the time. You can be busy about a lot of things. Martha was told that when Jesus himself came to visit her home. Martha, Martha, you are busy about so many things, and yet so few are needed, indeed only one. It's not just busyness. And if busyness doesn't equal holiness, if busyness doesn't equal perfection, well then, what are we to do? We're called to stop and look at reality and take a good hard look. And sometimes that means putting up the mirrors and saying, what is it that's there in the mirror? What's there in the mirror is something that's in the image and likeness of God. Ever think about that? That we are somehow in the image and likeness of God. Now, it didn't go right after that. That's true. We look at this reading, the first reading, which is, of course, famous, that Hillary read tonight. And this famous reading is the basis of our creation. And it answers that question, how the heck did evil come in the world? Well, we can go back to the very beginning of our humanity, or you can ask yourself that about yourself. You can ask yourself that about some cute little grandchild of yours. You look at this cute little grandchild, you say, that little child, he or she is perfect. That little child's perfect, innocent and perfect. And then they grow up to be this age or that age or whatever. What happened? What happened to that child? Isn't that the case? Remember, that child was you. That child was me. And we have to ask, why is it that we fall into sin? Why is it that we just don't stay in that same trajectory, you know, to keep going as we once were, put on that trajectory towards God? And you can't just blame it on your parents or all your environment or everything else. I know all kinds of parents, and some of you are right here, who said to me, I tried to do my best by my children, and yet my child doesn't practice. Or my child has gone this way or that way, because my child isn't a child anymore. He or she's an adult. And what happened? And often they will blame themselves, and you know, sometimes maybe you didn't do something right. Okay, that's true. But in a lot of cases, people try very, very hard to do their best to raise up their children. And then, of course, people make a decision. Isn't that true? In the end, they make a decision. And those decisions are not always good decisions. It doesn't matter how often you listen to Dr. Phil or Oprah. They're not always good decisions. And you know, you can't solve all your problems on the stage with Dr. Phil or with Oprah or whoever. Because if we could solve all of our problems naturally, we would have. The difficulty is, of course, that in many cases, the problems that we have created, the decisions that we've made, the consequences of those decisions are such that they're very hard to untangle. they really are. If you look at someone you have loved who has gotten into a real mess, think about it for a second. Someone you love who's gotten into a real mess. You say, how the heck is she ever going to get out of that? It won't be without consequences. But how did they ever get out of it? It is not natural strength that is going to allow us to do this. Here is one of the great realities of our world and of our faith. Our world says, your strength will be enough, right? Your strength will be enough. You can do anything you want. But you don't have to be very old to figure that. It's just a lie. And it is the lie of the tempter, isn't it? It's the lie of the devil that says, you've got everything you need. You got it all together, right? And you just can do whatever you want to do. And then we certainly realize, you know what? I can do whatever I want to do, but it isn't always great, is it? It isn't always for the good. How then do I restore that good? Yes, if we can't go back to the Garden of Eden, and if we have set our eyes on other delights and realized that those delights can turn to ashes in our mouth, what then can we do? It is only the power of Jesus Christ alone that can effect change in people's lives. That is the only power that is going to effect true, lasting change. That is the only power that can undo the consequences of sin, of screw-ups, of mistakes in the past. And it doesn't matter whether it's long past or whether it's quite immediate. Think of what the power of the grace of God can actually do. As we heard in the second reading, if because of one man's trespass, death exercised dominion through that one, much more surely will those who receive the abundance of grace and the free gift of righteousness exercise dominion in life through that one man, Jesus Christ. Yes, people mess up all the time, and I include myself. Yeah, I want to take down the mirror too. But the truth is that if we are able to look critically to see how it is that we have made our mistakes, that we have sinned, then we can open ourselves and our life to the power of Jesus Christ. That is what we need to say to people. Nobody wants to come home like the prodigal son to the father and say, look, I've sinned. Almost every one of us will rationalize our sins, our mistakes, our mess-ups away. Isn't that true? Or we won't talk about them. Don't talk about such and such when she comes home, or don't talk about this when he comes home, or whatever. We all know that. But we do need to pray that we can look critically and allow others and help others to look realistically and critically and say, in the midst of this, Jesus Christ's power is enough for you. Because that's what grace is. Grace is tapping in to the very fact that Jesus Christ is alive and present to us, and that his power, the very power of God himself in our world, will be enough to erase those sins, to allow us to begin again, to allow us to come back to that first certainty of who we are, people who are made in the image and likeness of God. And even though we've smudged that picture, or others that we love have, it is enough for them to know that that doesn't need to have the power over the rest of their life. There is another power. There is another dominion. And that is the power of God himself. We all know that many, many times people who have come through the worst of things in life have found God. I've spent enough time working in prisons, and I see guys who find God, and don't just laugh at them. You know, it's pretty easy to find God when you ain't got nothing left, as they say. And when you're stuck thinking about it, thinking about it, and thinking about it, and there isn't much else to do but think about it. And I know people can delude themselves and try not to, whatever, but often they don't want to think about it because if they only had their natural strength, they would only have despair. Isn't that right? That's why people despair. That's why people turn to thoughts of suicide or worse, or why they drown themselves in all kinds of things so we don't think about it. What we are called is to be apostles of a different reality. We're called to be heralds of a new, certain truth, and that is the truth of Jesus Christ, that we are not condemned just to be the children of the old Adam and Eve, but we've been redeemed by the new Adam, by Jesus Christ himself, by someone who is like us in all things but sin, as it says in one of the Eucharistic prayers, so that we can say to others, there's a different way. There's a different way because I know that way. Did you ever wonder why Jesus Christ was tempted in the desert? We know he wasn't going to succumb to sin, but he was tempted in the desert. It's so that he could share with us that temptation. We all have those temptations in all the various forms. And many have been the homilies and sermons that have been built on the temptations. But the people you love have had those temptations and given way to those temptations too. And if we love them, we want the best for them. As I asked you last Sunday, take this Lent and pray and fast and give alms for at least one or two of the people you know and love who do not yet know the power of Jesus Christ in their life, who don't yet or perhaps have somewhat forgotten that Jesus Christ can undo all things. And I think that's the important thing to remember this Lent. That's why, as I've said before, we're bringing in this lay evangelist to be able to give us a mission quite appropriately called the Search and Rescue, about being able to evangelize, to speak to the people that we know and love. It would be great if we all become lay evangelists and are called to go out to all the people. But maybe we should start with the people that God in his wisdom has given to us. And we can do that if somehow we can find the words, the strength, and the courage to be able to speak to them. First, we have to look in the mirror. First, we have to be able to see how God has worked his grace in my life. I don't care if you're 17 or 77. God has been active in your life. How has Jesus Christ been able to undo the consequences, the sins, the mistakes of what we've had in our life, what I've done in my life, so that when I look in the mirror again, I can see that child of God and I can say to somebody else, if God has done this with me, how much more can God do with you?